How is everyone? It's a beautiful night. I myself have had a bit of a discombobulating, difficult time over the past, today's Wednesday, so almost a week. A very good friend of mine, really a family member, a friend from a Vietnamese family that's readopted me, so I call them my Vietnamese family. She had a really bad bicycle accident and was in the ICU last Thursday. And we thought maybe we'd actually have to stop at the hospital on the way. No broken bones, but the doctor said it was the worst concussion she's seen. So, you know, she just went to rehab in Vallejo, so, you know, send her good thoughts. So it's moments like this that helps me, and I think what probably helps most of us, to remember the fragility of our lives. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you say? Mm-hmm. To really evaluate what's important to us, right? What matters most. For me, these past few days, it's been a friend, really, like my younger sister. For the past few weeks, perhaps more acutely about the nature of our country, and perhaps for the last few months, in the last almost 2 years, also the nature of our country. So, I think it's when what is important to us, when what matters to us feels like it's being threatened, it's disappearing, or perhaps may die or cease to be, it's a difficult time, you know. In fact, someone very close to this friend, another sibling, you know, I talked with them and they were like, I'm really discombobulated. I need to practice more. I need to go to the Zendo. You know, I'm off to yoga now, but I'm going to go to the Zendo later. And I think for many of us, that's, you know, a response for sure. I think it's a useful response. I will say that as my sitting group, we meet once a week on Mondays, and I've been thinking a lot about what should we do, you know, about the condition of the world. I myself, one night I was just like, right after the whole detention issue, I was just like, I don't know what to say. You know, I've talked about compassion over and over. I don't know what the heck that is anymore. Recently, I've really been talking about how I love metta, you know, and I'm in the lineage, and Blanche is my Dharma teacher, and she was a big metta person, you know, and in fact, I was at a Jukai reception a couple weeks ago, and afterward, people are like, you're the metta person, someone was saying to me, because I sign everything, you know, metta. Or lately I thought I'd mix it up, and I was putting extending kindness. You know, because when you do metta, you want to extend it, right? So I was actually really proud to be known as the metta person. And yet I was thinking, is it time, right? Is it time to move on from metta, right? And when I talked about that in the group, you know, we did come up with one way of looking at it. To me, is metta is like almost like there, you know. At a time when we're hurting, we want our caretaker, or we want to care for ourselves by going there, it's okay, right? And I thought that, well, maybe it's time to move to Karuna, right? Part of the four Brahma Viharas, right? Classically, it starts with metta, then karuna, the wish to alleviate suffering, oneself or other, mudita, often translated as sympathetic or empathetic joy. I like to say inclusive joy, right? Joy with others and their happiness. And of course yourself. And then upekkha or pekcha, which is equanimity. And very much in the Brahma Viharas, it is about understanding cause and effect or karma, right? Because of this, that has come into being, which I think is really important when we think about how did we get here kind of idea, right? And by that I don't mean there's, you know, no sense of blame in that. It's just what are the causes that got us here, right? And so my thing has been about, like, what is it that we can do, right? And I think, again, that I certainly came to practice, you know, the reason I put on my website in part that, you know, I'm from a Buddhist family is because it is true. And there's a real sense, I think, you know, and when I came to what I thought was practice when I was living in the U.S. or have been living in the U.S., it was the meditation, right? And probably most of you, you know, that's what we think practice is, mostly in convert Buddhism. And I think it's great, right? And yet, a large bulk of Buddhist teaching and Buddhist practice is very much on social relation, right? Or more specifically, social harmony by the structures of things, right? And so I have been talking about that, and we studied, if I found a deck of cards, I would have talked to you more about the four method of guidance, which is Dogen's wording, the Bodhisattva four method of guidance, which is Dogen's wording, but he also took it from an old Pali text on the four bases of social harmony, right? And then the other thing that we don't think a lot about is Kalyana Mitra, right? Spiritual friendship. So to me, part of having to be with our suffering, I think there is an emphasis that it's an individual thing, right? How do I transform, you know, my angst, my discombobulation? Where can I find the settleness? And I think it's fantastic, without a doubt. And I think from that place, the possibility of making more wise, equanimous, right, decision is certainly helpful. And I think, you know, one of the response to difficulty is you just want to, like, not get out of bed, roll up, or just really figure it out, and you feel isolated. And I think it's actually even, I would even say a force of oppression to make you feel that you're isolated, that your views are extreme, that it's not worth speaking up because you won't be heard or you'll be negated, right? So I think it behooves us to remember that our practice is more than facing the wall on the cushion. So here's from Roshi Wendy Ikkyo Nakayo, right? She's the Roshi of Los Angeles Zen Center, right? Kalyana Mitra is the Sanskrit word for spiritual friendship. This friendship is something much more than someone to hang out with, but rather connotes a person or even a thing that becomes our guide, a teacher, and serves to inspire us along our path to awakening. There's a common Zen expression that when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Ready or not, teachers are constantly appearing in our lives. But sometimes it's difficult to recognize because we are looking for someone that meets our image or idea of teacher. Or regard this person or thing as an obstacle in our life, rather than as something that can awaken us to life's meaning. For instance, we could say that illness is Kalyana Mitra. The death of a sibling can be Kalyana Mitra. the birth of our child can be Kalyana Mitra. Falling in love can be Kalyana Mitra. In short, anything which shakes us out of our ongoing slumber and creates an opening to a vista beyond our narrow image or experience of ego self is a spiritual friend worthy of our gratitude. It may be difficult to regard a painful experience as a friend. We respond by pushing such experiences away or by grasping onto something else. But in Zazen, we learn to sit in the midst of our suffering, much as one would do with someone in need. Just sitting, just seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, awareness, recognizing and affirming the most essential nature of our situation, wherever it may be. So again, that's a great place to start. Right? Now here's some Gil, right? Franz Dahl, also on Kalyana Mitra. He said it can be easy to think Buddhist practice is individualistic and solitary. Teachings on being mindful of oneself and taking responsibility for one's action can seem to emphasize a focus on oneself. The practice of sitting in meditation with one's eyes closed can also suggest that Buddhism is about separating oneself from society. Well, certainly, remember he teaches mostly in the insight tradition, that's why the eyes are closed, right? While certainly an important part of the practice is personal and inwardly focused, this is only a part of what Buddhist practice is about. A much more significant part of the practice is interpersonal. It concerns the rich world of our relationships with others. In fact, the interpersonal teachings and practices of Buddhism creates the context and the foundation for the inner personal practices, such as meditation. Though many people don't start Buddhist practice this way, traditionally it is said to begin with creating healthy relationship with others. This part of the path is usually called training in sila or virtue. Right? So again, you know, I certainly came to what I thought of practice as meditation, but really, most of the Buddhist world, it starts with sila, or virtue. Right? I experienced at an insight retreat many years ago. It was a 2-month retreat. And as we were finishing, you know, because in the insight tradition, you're completely silent, right? No chanting, well, some chanting at night if you wanted to do it, but mostly you're completely silent, so they always transition you out of silence into speaking. And so we had, you know, like short little dialogues, and then also we had this meeting with people who wanted to go practice elsewhere, right? And this young man was from Achan Cha's place, the place established in England, right? Actually, Achan Sumedho's main place. And he said that he was there for a year, and since it's in the Thai forest tradition, that a lot of Thai monks were also there. And this one Thai monk had come up to him at one point and said, I've really noticed that in the West, you guys have a really hard time with meditation. Is that your experience? And he goes, yes, that's my experience. And then the Thai monk said, I think I know why, right? And so the guy was like, why, you know? And he said, well, this is how it is. So when the practice of Buddhism is like this, let's say you want to make a chair. Oh, Dana might really be, and Jean, because I know you're woodworkers, right? So let's say you want to make a chair. So first you would go into the forest. Remember the Thai forest tradition. So you go in the forest and you would look around and you would look for a tree that would be the right kind of wood for your chair. Let's say a hardwood, if you want it to last a while, right? So when you have the tree, first what you would need to do is to cut it down, right? Then you would plane it, We did that as were you guys there for the Tassajara when the big oak tree fell down and we planed it? Oh, that's where the bench across the Cabargo Creek is, right? So plane it, and then you cut it into the correct pieces, and then either you know join it or you use nails or whatever into the chair shape. And the last step to making a chair is you would take sandpaper and then you would sand it down to rough out the edges, right? So that you won't get splinters, right? So this is the correct way of practicing. But what I see is, right, meditation is like the sandpaper. Right? So in essence, what you guys do is you take the sandpaper, you go into the forest, you look for a tree, and then you start sanding to make a chair. And so no wonder it's so hard. So this is the thing about sila, right? Sila is, you know, virtuous conduct, the precepts, right? The 16 bodhisattva precepts in our tradition. It's really about how do we interact with each other. Morality is usually called, but I like to say compassionate conduct. How are we going to interact with each other in a way that is in harmony? So, that's one. So the other, actually, this is from the Samyutta Nikaya, right? As he was sitting there, Venerable Ananda said to the Blessed One, the Buddha, of course, "This is half of the holy life, Lord. Admirable friendship, admirable companionship, admirable camaraderie." Right? Looking at the Sangha. The Buddha replied, "Don't say that, Ananda. Don't say that. Admirable friendship, admirable companionship, admirable camaraderie is actually the whole of the holy life. When a monk, practitioner, has admirable people as friends, companions, and colleagues, he, she, they can be expect, I added that part, can be expected to develop and pursue the Noble Eightfold Path." Mm-hmm. Practice. Mm-hmm. So, here's from Gill again. "The idea that good friendships are the precursor for the path of practice was particularly important in the pre-literate times of the Buddha, right? There were no books that would introduce people to the teaching and practice. So the introduction always came in person, through a good spiritual friend." Isn't that funny? Because most of us, probably, I know I read tons of books first, right, about Buddhism. Then I listened to, this will age me, you know, I listened to meditation instruction on cassette tapes. Jack Kornfield, actually, from Dog Ear Books, right? So now sometimes I still hear Jack's voice when I'm meditating. That's how most of us here in the West do it. But really, in the day of the Buddha, it was about people. And in fact, we do it here, right? We do it here. The Shuso, where's the Shuso now? There she is. I apologize. She, her, are your pronouns? My pronouns are she, her, by the way. It's to be your spiritual friend, right? In fact, when I was Shuso, that's what Blanche said. You just need to be a friend to everyone. Right? That's your main role as the Shuso. So, there are actually parameters in the teachings, of course, on what a good spiritual friend is. One, to be an example of practice. To demonstrate how Buddhist teachings can be practiced and expressed, can provide important lessons for how we can practice. So again, the Shuso is the one, right? The show up, the Shuso always shows up, cleans the toilet. Did you guys still do that? Oh, you missed out. Clean the toilets, do the compost at Tassajara, right? And then have tea with people. I know you had tea before, so. And in the tea, you serve, don't you? Yes, the Shuso is a server, or mum in this case, right? Right? And you're being trained and introduced by your teacher, right? So, and of course, you know, all the leaders, really part of becoming a teacher, the more and more that I've become a teacher, it's less and less about doing things right. You know, in the beginning, you're always like, I can do everything. And in fact, as Dana and Patrice and Jean and Kathy will probably affirm, I was known as the, you know, the form queen. And I was just perfect in every way until I wasn't. Right? And so I thought so much. And we think on the outside, you think Zen is so much about doing it right. And yet, the higher up you get, the more you realize it's not whether people bow correctly. Right? In fact, Edie the Shuso, we came early. Shinsen, my student here, she drove me. And just as I said, oh, well, I haven't been here in a while, so do we enter on this side? And then just off the top of my head, I thought, oh, you're a student. Maybe you want to be the Jiko. Right? I'm sorry, Edie. Just was like, oh, okay. And then she just started showing us in a very nice way, you know. Shinsen wanted another round. She did it, very much like a good friend. We just met, and yet she was very gracious. And this is how what we're taught, really. It seems in Zen that it's all about the form, but it really is about the way in which we get along in the Zendo. In fact, so much of the forms is about how do we negotiate the space together? How do we preserve the quietness so that we can practice easily, right? There's no worry. In fact, in some ways, on a certain level, we say some general form so that it helps us all to have a sense of settledness here, right? Like I may have been here since it changed the Zendo, but I'm not quite sure. But there is really this very much sense that wherever you go in the world, a Zendo will have a certain feel that you can, yes, maybe you would go down the wrong alley at first or something, but in general you have a sense, I bow to the sea, I turn right, I bow out, right? And that's almost the most important thing, and facing the wall, right? In terms of sitting. So, and then support and encouragement. Without practice friends, one can feel isolated and even a bit odd in one's community. Being the only person who meditates or doesn't gossip or doesn't drink alcohol. Knowing others who practice and who share the same values can sometimes make the difference between practicing and not practicing. I was once at a concentration retreat, and afterward people were asking questions, and one man from a tiny little town in Texas, right, just was asking, how can I have a sitting group? How do I start one? And he was crying because he had been wanting to meditate so much, and he had spent years trying to get to this retreat center, right, because he felt really isolated in that small town. So what we do here, I mean, just having the space itself is support, right? And it takes so much to have such a space. Also, Kalyana Mitra, your spiritual friends, can be an important source of feedback. You might not like that, but yes, they are. This can happen gradually as we see ourselves mirrored by others. Our mindlessness can be seen more clearly if we're around mindful or aware people. Our lack of ethical behavior can be highlighted by being with other ethical people. Our conceit about our understanding or our practice can become clear when we are with people who hold themselves lightly or show no support or interest in our conceit. It's really funny, you know, I did a practice period with Reb, and he made us all ask him for feedback. And of course you can just go up to Reb and just say, will you give me feedback? You have to face him, you have to put your hands in gusho, and you have to say, please, You know, I think then he was calling himself retreat leader. Will you give me feedback, right? And I got up all my nerve, you know, because he has a presence, right? I'm not a student. And also, you know, I don't know, it was my second or third or fourth practice period, Tassar. And I asked him, right, shaking. And then he said yes. Never said a word to me, right? And then you were like, why, I want it, right? So, and then, you know, Vicky Austin, you know Vicky Austin? Mel is her teacher, Blanche's teacher too. Mel said that when, Vicky said that when she was Shuso with Mel at Tassajara, you know, that's 90 days, right, the practice period. Every morning she would go in, you know, and open the Zendo, right? And so every day for 89 days afterward, he would, as she put down her zagu, he would say no. And then on the 90th day, she put it down, and he said, okay. And she said, what was it? And he's like, I'm not telling you, do you know? It's not whether you get it right, it's that you paid attention, right, when I didn't specify, right? So how? There's many different ways. Of course, we hear a lot of Zen story about sticks and about yelling and all that. And part of learning how to best help people is seeing what it is that that person needs maybe today. It doesn't have to be forever, right? And what is it that that person might need right now? And then, of course, we're human, so we make mistakes. But in general, it becomes paying attention to where you can be helpful. How can you be a service? Up here is about service. And it feels like up here is about power. And of course it comes with power. I'm not denying that. Right? But mostly up here is about looking out there, seeing your suffering, and what is it that from this seat, or from as we're walking out of here, or down the street, or when someone in your life is in pain, what is it that we can do to be of service? Mm-hmm. And making our best effort for that. And giving feedback is part of that. Of course, it can be explicit, you know. When I was at Tassajara, I was head of the garden for most of the time. And being an over-efforter, I actually worked way too hard and got carpal tunnel, had back problems. And people kept saying to me, rest, rest. But I was like, no, right? And even though, you know, after a while you think, oh, I'm doing it for a good reason, because I was thinking the plants are dying. I don't want the plants to die. You know, I need to go water them. I need to X, Y, and Z, right? But I was working myself really hard, and I was so bad that during a practice period, first, again, being the form queen that I was, I, of course, was in full lotus. Then I got so bad I was half lotus. Then I was quarter lotus. Then I was in a chair. Then I was laying down. Then I got to the point where one sesshin, I could not sit still. It was a sesshin in which one of the pine rooms was a workout room, so I was either in there literally, I'm not exaggerating, dancing just to be moving, or I would be walking up the road and down. I just couldn't sit still, right? Like my body hurt in stillness, right? And so I had Dokusan with Reb, and you know, and I said to him, people keep telling me to rest. But I'm afraid of resting. Because what if I get lazy? How will I know? How will I know when it becomes that line between over-efforting and just laziness? You know, because on a certain level, certainly I was thinking about sleeping in. I was thinking about, you know, not doing whatever. Because that's part of practice, right? You just look at the schedule and go, what part can I not do? Right? What part can I change somehow? Isn't that true? You get the schedule. That's what all sesshin is. Because the first 3 days you're like, ooh, what can I manipulate? You know? What can I put on, take off, tweak a little here, tweak with it. When can I drink tea? When can I, you know, it's all to like negotiate, and then you get so tired of it that you just let go and you just follow the schedule, right? And that's when the golden age of Zen begins, right? And you actually relax then. But meanwhile, almost everything is like a sesshin, right? So I was in the third day of my sesshin, basically, in this many days of pain. So I was saying that to Rev, how will I know? How will I know when I've become lazy? I don't trust myself anymore, right? He said, well, how long have you been here? And I think it was my fourth practice period, whatever long, I've been there a while, continuously, right? So 2 years. And I said that, and he said, well, lucky you. Because hopefully you've made some friends here. Have you made friends here? And I said, yes, I have, of course. So, well, lucky then, because now you have friends. So you just try something else. If people have been saying rest, then try resting. And because you have friends, you can trust that if you've become lazy, someone will go, excuse me, Lian, I think you've become lazy. Why don't you come back to the Zendo? Right? So you have to just trust. Right? You try it out. We don't know, but you try it out, and you just trust that one of your friends, or one of the practice leader, will go, hey, it's time. Right? And that's the hard part, isn't it? Trusting ourselves or other people sometimes. We can also be supportive by the Dharma, by support in the less explicit way. Dharma friendships are wonderful places to have Dharma discussions, to explore the teachings and our experience in practice through conversation with others. It can deepen our understanding in many ways. It can bring us new perspectives, questions, and areas for further investigation. To have these discussions with people who know us well adds the value of these conversations. Can I mention what we were just talking about outside? Yeah. In fact, you know, Patrick and I were just standing out there, and I don't know how we got on it, but we were talking about how, you know, perhaps our forms can get in the way, right? When is it that our forms can get impede people from practicing? Right? And correct me if I'm wrong, but you said, oh, I was thinking, even our stepping with our foot closest to the door jamb as we enter and bowing, maybe that's a hard hurdle, right? You didn't say this part, but for people to get through. And you said that, right? And it's true, you know? I think that it can be. Because I would say mostly, in my experience of many Zazen instruction mornings on Saturday at City Center, up San Francisco Zen Center, that people are really kind of all that thing that we do, going left, going right, stepping in, whatever. And now we do form instruction at City Center. For many years, they didn't, right? Maybe you'll get it a little bit as part of Zazen instruction, but even Zazen instruction. I mean, we all love Zazen, right? And it's like the word, right? Which, of course, we don't define, but it's the word. But for most people, they're like, what does Zazen mean? So that's just another, right? This is why, and then also, perhaps, naming things. You know, I learned from East Bay Meditation Center. My group is called Meditation Group. Right? I don't call it a sitting group, because for some people, sitting is difficult. Right? I certainly had experienced it at Tassajara. So when I heard that, I thought, oh, right? Announce your pronouns are a way to make things much more open and spacious. Right? Imply any assumptions here, right? And we get to define and we get to reveal ourselves to each other. And to me actually, you know, when I was thinking about talking tonight, I will say that I, you know, my habitual habit, I still have to sort everything out and make it look nice. But part of me is like, when is the day going to be? Right? And I won't need this. Because really, all I'm doing up here, I'm really doing up here, is saying to you, this is my experience. I hope there's some resonance to your experience. Right? In fact, that's the purpose. It's not to just talk about myself. It's the purpose is to say something that you can feel it in your life. Right? Some relating. Some question, in fact. Not necessarily answer. Just more a sense of, interesting. Oh, I wonder about that. Oh, I feel that. And it hits me here, or it hits me here. Right? That's my hope. Right? Because really, and I want to go back here to what Roshi Nakao says, which is, my printer did not do well. Okay. We regard this person, right? It's common in the Zen expression that when a student is ready, a teacher will appear. But really, if we can regard this person or thing as an obstacle in our life rather than something that can awaken us to life's meaning. Does it have to take difficulty in our life? Or better yet, can it be, when there's difficulty in life, what is it? What is it? Can we, our practice really is to be able to have some composure, right? Which is what the sitting does, really. But after that, hopefully the sila and the interacting and the kalyana mitra and the precepts, right? All that, what it does is it helps us to have some sense of how can I relate to this event that's happening with my life in a kind way, in an open way, in a spacious way, and with all the people that I'm interacting in my difficulty. Right? When I heard that my friend had had this accident, right? And I got the call in the middle of the night, but I literally had waken up to go to the bathroom, right? And had a text, and it was an hour before, so I text back, you know, and they were, whatever, they didn't answer. So it was hours later that I heard, and then I was ready to go there, and it was in San Jose, and I live in San Francisco. And she was in ICU then, you know? And all day I was just waiting, and to me, they're my family. Right? And I know they feel that way about me too. So I was just waiting to just go there whenever. And I remember, you know, when my mother died, I had all these Asian friends that would just hang out with me. And in fact, hanging out, like, you know, and they cook for you and whatever, but we didn't talk about the event per se, but just being together, right? And that's what I wanted to do. Now, this friend is married to somebody not of Vietnamese culture, and now there's a real clash with the family about what needs to happen there, you know? And that's, I think, just the way things are, right? And so how is it that we're all going to negotiate this together, right? Because this person right now can't say what they want. And that's what it comes down to. How do we create the condition that we can be authentic? Which means, you know, that sometimes we're going to mess up. I'm going to have desire that we want, and then we have to practice. We rely on our practice and the pausing, the being able to go there, right? And yet to respond, to alleviate suffering when we need to and when it's called upon us. Right? Maybe that's sitting by the bedside in the middle of the night. Maybe it's going to get some soup. Maybe it's going away, right? Because you're not needed now, right? Even though you think you're needed or whether you want to be there. So, I see it's getting close to time. So when our lives come to a point where things feel important to us and things matter to us and that feels threatened, perhaps disappearing or may die, I think I was thinking about this and I think, oh, I think I finally got it. Well, another version of the middle way, right? Really, I was thinking, what happens here in this moment where things are a bit tense around this situation, right? So when something difficult for me, arises, it is part of my practice to know what is right here and right now. What are the sensations? What are the emotions I'm experiencing? What are the habitual patterns? What are the karmic habitual tendencies that I find myself, going round and round in? And can I identify it? Can I build the capacity to hold it? Not necessarily act on it, and that's the hardest part, right? It's not to act on it, even though that energy keeps on pushing at you. And how do I hold that as I interact with others? And of course, that also has its own energy. And it has to be about the interaction. It can't be just that I need to find subtleness, because I can find subtleness, but my subtleness could be different from what the situation is calling for. So perhaps it's this middle way is how do we find the balance and the harmonious place, which means that things are always shifting and that we don't know. And that's the difficult part, that we don't know. And do we have enough wherewithal to just have a sense of, I'm trying my best, oh, messed up there, right? There's that habitual pattern happening, and then be able to go, oh, can I just pause or let go for a minute? Where can I interact again? Right? Always keep on interacting. And mostly, really, I think, at least for me, the thing that keeps me going is remembering the bonds that we built or created. I would say, when I was coming here, Dana and Patrice reached out, and, we haven't talked to each other very much, but we have bonds from Tassajara, right? And it was very sweet, to know that I have friends here that brought us food, cared for us, made sure we knew the forms, right? It was really very sweet. And here's again from Roshi Nagao. She ends this section, it's on spiritual friendship. This together, right? Maybe I should read the one before to remind us. It may be difficult to regard a painful experience as a friend. We respond by pushing such experiences away or by grasping onto something else. But in Zazen, we learn to sit in the midst of our suffering, much as one would do with someone in need, just sitting, just seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, awareness, recognizing and affirming the most essential nature of our situation, whatever it may be. This together speaks directly to our most basic vow to save all beings. A realization only truly comes alive when it is used in the service of others and helping others to awaken to life's essential nature, what matters most, right? So recognizing and appreciate the spiritual friends in your life, you yourself serving others in this way, and others and things continually befriending you, pointing to the unsurpassable wisdom that is our life. Thank you for your kind attention. I have 3 minutes for any thoughts, questions. 2.5 minutes to stay now. Yes.
Thank you for bringing up this topic because it does provide some relief in these difficult times. We can turn to spiritual friends, so it's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Kathy?
Well, I'm reflecting on a couple of things that you just said. I think sometimes maybe we think that the spiritual friendship has to always be harmonious.
Mm.
And especially, like you said, you know, your idea of what may be helpful may be different from what somebody else needs.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some kind of, I don't know what the right word is, but like courage or bravery to just hang in there and keep trying and have some kind of good feeling about the possibility of it. And not being attached to what it's supposed to look like, especially not your view of what it's supposed to look like,
mm-hmm.
but how to stay connected and real at the same time, I think it's the most advanced practice. So I'm just thinking of this as you're speaking.
You know that I always regret that I can't remember. I read so much in the early days, especially at Tazara. I read this, and I think maybe Chumpa Rinpoche said this, said that for Christians, you know, with practice, they gain grace, right? And for Buddhists, with practice, we gain patience. Right? And I think it's that where we really just stick with it, right? Patience for me is the stick with itness, and it takes courage. It takes waiting it out. It takes not knowing. You know, the greatness of being a Tathagata is you're in that valley, monastic practice, but, you know, you're in that valley and you're stuck with these people and you keep doing the same thing, especially in the in-practice period, you know, we're doing all the same thing together. And I don't know how many relationships, you know, that have turned and you have no idea what happened, but all of a sudden you're friends, right? Or you hardly know somebody, but you know the way they walk, you know, when they're serving you. Or you know how you can pick out somebody at the end of the path at Tathagata, just the way they walk, just from the side of your eyes, right? And then later when you see them, you know, people have done practice periods together, you're just like, ah, right? And they may not have been somebody you hung out with on days off or when hiking or anything, but there's that bond of shared experience. And a practice period is not a fun thing, really, right? Most of us are terrified of practice periods, right? Right? Or sashins, and yet we keep on doing it. As my students like to hear, or not like to hear, but I always say, a sashin is one big disappointment. Because how many of you have not been disappointed in sashin? Over and over, something will disappoint you in sashin. There's no getting away from that. Right? And at some point, everything is lovely, even though they disappoint. Maybe it's that. The stick with itness. I think that's a good one. Faith helps, which comes from doing it, and then the patience comes with waiting it out, waiting for this strong emotion, this fear of loss or hurt, be it my own or other people's, right? Just waiting it out, see what happens next. Be able to be right there. And that's what life is, right? What happens next? Or what is happening now, that will be coming next, right? All right. I thank you for your spiritual friendship. Thank you very much.